and may the peace of Christ be with you. Welcome to Holy Family Radio. This is Deacon Jim Thornhill, and I'm privileged to be your host today. I warmly invite you to enter into another conversation in living the Catholic life. You know, at times when we say we're living the Catholic life, we probably think of something we want to do with ourselves that would be more exciting than what we think we're doing now. Maybe you want to take up parachuting, or maybe you need to go hang gliding for the Lord. Maybe you've had a desire somewhere in your life to say, I want to be a CIA agent, and I'm going to go defend the presidency and the Senate and the Congress and all that. But would you ever think yourself you might want to be a pontifical Swiss guard for the Pope? I mean, who would think of that? Well, let me tell you something. There is a gentleman here in this studio that is exactly what he did. And his name is Andreas Widmer, and he's here today with us. And Andreas, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, Deacon.
It's a privilege to see you here. You know, I know you just got done speaking to some youth at, where were you at? What school?
Sacred Heart.
Sacred Heart.
Academy.
Yes.
Yep. That was beautiful.
Loved it. Those kids love the story.
Great kids.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, and I know tonight you're going to be we're going to be talking about that, but I know you're going to have a role with Legatus and everything else too. But
yes,
and that's wonderful. But you know, Andreas, I think what important thing for us to do first of all is get the people who are listening to us to know who you are,
mm-hmm.
and what got you to be a Pontifical Swiss Guard. I mean, that is you're the first gentleman I've ever met. That I've known as
well. Well, there's not many of us.
I would think not.
And most of them are, of course, in Switzerland.
Well, you know, the first question I ask is, here you are, you're with a Saint, Pope John Paul II.
That's right.
What a privilege.
Indeed.
What a privilege. But born and raised Catholic?
So I'm from Lucerne, Switzerland.
Okay.
Actually, I'm from a small village outside of Lucerne. Lucerne is my state.
Okay.
It's like being from Michigan.
Right.
And I grew up in a small village. My diocese, you know, I was born in the 60s and I grew up in the 70s, right when catechesis wasn't exactly what you would hope it was going to be. And so,
suffered the same malady here in the States.
And then probably part of it, I have to blame myself for just not really paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
So I was not really well catechized, partially my fault, partially the surroundings. But believe it or not, I did not ever think of going into the Swiss Guards for any kind of religious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
To me, when I found out that I could be trained to be a bodyguard, I thought that was about the coolest thing I could do. And religion had nothing to do with it.
Now, because we have a radio audience, they don't see us, but you're built for a guard. How tall are you?
6'9".
6'9", yes.
Yeah.
You've got some height and some girth on you there, so you'd be a good one for a guard.
Yeah. So it's my thing, you know. I sort of grew up, you know, I like to say when I grew up in this mountain village, it's a bit like Heidi, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And literally, you know, you see these movies. I grew up like this, like outside with cows and goats and just beautiful.
Skiing.
Beautiful environment. But I, you know, the youngest of six, couldn't really find my place. You know, my siblings, four older brothers, they can always do everything better than you because you're the youngest. Struggled with.
Were you the biggest?
No.
Oh, my goodness.
I was 10 years older than some of my brothers. So struggled with identity and saying, who am I? What am I doing here? And then because I was a rambunctious little boy, I didn't pay attention in school, so I failed there. And then, you know, one thing leads to another. You sort of become a bit rebellious.
Right.
And I pretty much covered all that up with my size and rambunctiousness. And so I became a sort of a tough guy.
Okay.
You know? But in a village like mine, you can't get – thank God I grew up there, because you can't get into all that much trouble.
Yeah. You know, as hard as you tried.
As hard as I tried. I mean, the extent to it was like to, you know, let the neighbor's rabbits all out and run away or tip the cows or something. So thank God I didn't grow up in the city. But in a very
– Now I'm going to break just for a second because I got to ask you this.
Yeah.
Tipping the cows.
Yeah.
Is that exactly what you do?
We did, yeah. And, I could tell you stories. Let's not go there.
Okay.
But it's, you know, I did all these things and by the time I was 18, 19 years old, I knew the feeling of what it was to be bad and to be on, you know, to do things and negatively and so on and failing. And I had a very low self-esteem, and I covered it all up with putting on this tough, tough facade. Don't look at me the wrong way or you have another thing coming.
Were you running with the wrong crowd? Or just guys to just
I wouldn't see I'm I'm thankful to God for letting me be born into that environment because, you know, in a village with 400 people, you can't run with the wrong crowd. There's only one crowd. There's only a few people. And so I just misbehaved.
Okay.
You know, I just misbehaved. And then went into the military. They of course, loved me because I was, like, big and strong and would do things. And then I learned from a friend that I, you know, that there's this place where you could be trained to be a bodyguard.
Okay.
And that was the coolest thing I've ever heard.
Thought that was great.
With that, no doubt. And they pay you for it.
Hey, what a deal, huh?
Yeah, what a deal.
What a deal.
And then,
but let me go back a little bit because as you're growing up, are you a regular? Are you churched every Sunday? Are you going to mass every Sunday? Are you taking any type of catechesis style? Are you going to what kind of school?
Yeah, so it's only public school in Switzerland.
Okay, right.
You know, I grew up in an era where. Much here, this was over a long time ago, but with us, with only 400 people, we had two classes in the same room, one teacher, two classes.
Right.
And we would go to church, we would go to church every Sunday, and, you know, because you had to. But it never dawned on me, like, I didn't actually understand the faith.
Right.
It was just something you had to do, just like you had to go to school. I didn't get school. Yeah. I didn't get faith either.
Out of 400, how many people were Catholic?
All of them.
All of them?
Yeah.
Oh, so it was a very... Okay.
These are mountain villages in Switzerland.
Okay.
And, you know, Switzerland is Protestant,
mm-hmm.
but the center of it remained Catholic, and we fought wars over this in my village, actually. And so they stayed Catholic, but the government is Protestant.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Were most of the people church-going on Sunday?
Everybody would go.
Okay, they'd go. Okay.
Yep,
okay.
Everybody would go. But, you know, it was cultural.
Let me not ascribe
that to others. Yeah.
Yeah. You could be conspicuously absent if you weren't there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Everybody had their seat and all that.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. So here you are on this journey, not getting much out of your Catholicism at this time.
No.
And how about the service?
The service was good for me because they taught me a thing or two about when to shut up and to follow orders.
And how to shut up.
Yeah. And like precisely then.
Yeah.
And so they taught me how to behave and to really submit and master my will. I mean, there are exercises in the Swiss military, and I ended up going to the officer school as well, that really subdue your will.
Okay.
And I learned that there.
Yeah.
And that was immensely valuable to me. I can only recommend it.
You know, I think that's probably one of the most difficult things for men in our culture, in all cultures, is to tame their will.
Exactly.
It's not within us normally. We want to be out there doing what we want, and we're willful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, that's the whole – I remember that I – throughout my whole growing up, I had this feeling. It's sort of chest high of a thirst that I want something, and I – try to quench it with all these things. That's why I did bad things.
Yeah.
And that's why I would, you know, start smoking or listen to loud music and skip school and everything because I'm after this.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to breathe it in and nothing I do quenches it.
Yeah.
And so even in the military, I went into high performance and we did all kinds of extreme stuff and nothing quenched it.
Kind of sounds like a guy by the name of St. Augustine.
My favorite saint.
Yeah, I would think so.
My favorite saint.
My soul's thirsting for you, Lord.
And I really, it's a feeling in the middle of your chest, and you almost feel like it's your lungs trying to breathe in, but they're not trying to breathe air. It's breathing in who you are. And I just didn't know who I was.
Exactly. And you didn't know you were a creation of God.
Not at all.
Or trying to live a life for the Lord Jesus.
Yeah.
So you're in the military, and you're still having this, probably still having this thirst, but still not identifying it.
Yeah.
So what next?
So that's when I learned that you could be this bodyguard, and I signed up. And, you know, I would have never applied if I knew how tough it was to get in, because they only take a few people. It's 115 of us.
Wow.
And so I would have never applied with myself.
Now, when you say there's 115 applied, or there's...
No, 115 are in the guards.
Are in the guards.
That's it.
Okay.
How many apply? I don't know. It must, hundreds every time. And then they choose, and there's all kinds of tests and things. But of course, with my size, so they don't screen for... The only Catholic screen they have is you have to be baptized and confirmed.
Okay.
Because... How else are you going to test when somebody's Catholic?
Exactly.
And there's no screen in that sense. The screen is more physical.
Okay.
And how are your records? And then criminal records and things like that. And there again, thank God I grew up in this little town. We didn't even have a police department when I grew up.
So the parents were the
and that's worse.
Yeah,
of course. But of course, I didn't have a police record or anything because there was no. I didn't do anything to concern that. So I could apply, and I actually got in. And then I told my parents about it. And they were a little surprised. My dad actually turned out that he loved it and that he said it was his dream to do it himself when he was younger.
Really?
I didn't know that.
And How old were you when you went in to this?
20.
20.
So I told him when I was 18 and a half that I got accepted, that I received a letter from Rome that called me to be there in November 1st, 1986.
Now, how surprised were you when you got that letter?
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. See, that really changed. I mean, and I remember in things like this, you try to think ahead of saying, how is this going to be? Like you get into college or you do something or you get married.
Right.
And you say, I can't even envision myself on that other side.
Exactly.
And I couldn't. And I kept trying to think, how am I going to be there and how is this going to be? I couldn't because I had nothing to.
During any of this time so far, was God a thought in your mind
Never.
About him bringing you to this?
No way.
No way.
No way.
Okay.
No,
okay.
Nothing.
Okay.
Just always about tough.
It was always about Andreas. You're doing it on your own.
Be a tough guy.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, and it just made me grow 2 more inches after I could say, hey, I'm going to be a bodyguard.
Wow.
The fact that I did this for the Pope was second or tertiary. I mean, I didn't really care.
Yeah. Yeah. At that point.
No.
So you're and I think that's a beautiful thing. You hear your dad had this secret ambition you never knew about.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful to hear that.
Yeah. I'm the youngest of six, and so, of course, it meant a lot to me when my dad sort of lit up. And
yeah.
Because before that, any time I had anything to do, you know, in that sense with my dad, it was because of bad grade or they're trying to throw me out of school or me having done something bad.
You were just too big to throw.
Yeah, yeah, me having done something bad and the neighbors coming and saying, he did this. And it's like, okay. And so here I have him in front of me, and he's like delighted.
Yeah.
And that really impressed me.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. So you get the letter at age 20 or 18.
18 and a half.
18 and a half.
And I went into the military first.
Oh, you went in the military first. And now you're in the military. Do you have to finish that out first,
yeah.
Right?
They wouldn't take you without it. Even though they're not affiliated,
okay.
They just say go there first because then we know you got the base training.
Okay.
We don't have to train you in that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So here you are, 20 years old now, and you're going to Rome.
Yeah. So I leave the military and I go to Rome. And I arrived there from my little village and in this huge city.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I tried to cross the street, I couldn't. I mean, the Italians are colorblind, I tell you.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what color's on that that light. They're going anyway.
That is so true.
And because you have to – I didn't know yet about this confidence of just walking and not looking, and they won't hit you.
Yeah.
But I looked, and as long as you look, you're not walking.
Yeah. And you come from 400, where you're probably lucky to have a couple cars on that street, into this metropolitan Rome.
What a change.
What a change.
Yeah.
I can only imagine.
Yeah.
I can only imagine.
It made a big impression on me.
Yeah. It did. So you arrived there safe and sound, and obviously didn't get hit by a car.
No. Nope.
So you start training.
And so they put me into a recruit school, and we're all in one room, 15, 12 of us, but still not everybody's going to stay because during the recruit school you have to pass tests, and then if you don't test through, then you have to leave. And so that was a bit apprehensive, and I went through this, and I actually finished my recruit school early, meaning I passed my test early.
Okay.
Because I really was committed,
and
I was going to do this, and I did it, and I finished, I think, on December 23rd.
Okay.
And my service wouldn't really start until January 1st, so I was ready to take some time off there.
Yeah, of course. So you're through the training.
Yeah.
Now, do you know yet where you're going to be? What's going to happen at this point?
Well, they teach you how this works, and you do all kinds of service. Some of it is in civil clothes, just like the CIA or the Secret Service, where you're around the Pope in the man you see in the suit and uniform, suit or them. It's not, you know, the uniform is sort of. The representative side of things, but you do Secret Service like anybody else.
Okay,
and you would do both. You know, especially as a young guy, you do more on the in the uniform than in the...
You would wear that formal Swiss Guard uniform.
Yes, yeah. For the more official side of stuff. And okay. Then for the protection, you go in a suit.
And I'm sure they had a custom-made one for you.
Everybody has custom-made.
Custom-made,
yeah,
right there.
Everything is custom-made.
Oh, my gosh, that's wonderful.
That was beautiful. To see myself in that first time, I couldn't recognize myself. First time I saw myself, like, walk by somewhere, I couldn't...
Kind of take your breath away.
Takes a breath away.
Yeah.
Changed the impression I had of myself.
Yeah. I'm sure it gave you a lot of gratification and a really a self worth of really making it.
My first big identity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, how wonderful. So here you are. Now you're 21.
20 and a half.
20 and a half. You're going to be guarding the Pope. Did that have what kind of significance did that have for you in your life? I mean, was it impactful, or did you think it's just an assignment?
Never thought about it. Well, I want to tell you when I first went on duty, but up to that point,
Let me ask you this. Yeah. At this point in your life, did you really understand the position and the authority of the Pope?
No idea.
Okay.
To me, he was the guy. When you're young and self-absorbed, you're not thinking about who the Pope is. You're thinking about what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And so blindness, I didn't have any idea what the Petrine ministry is, who this man, Karol Wojtyła, is, no idea. Yeah. I knew he was Polish. I knew he was the Pope. He dresses in white. That's all I knew.
Just another guy in the church.
Yep. And I didn't regard him as this, I didn't regard him with that kind of respect.
Yeah.
I would respect him because he's the man I protect.
Right.
But I didn't have... the papal aura. He didn't have that papal aura to me.
Right. Did you respect the office or just the person, or neither, really?
I didn't understand. They understand. The office I didn't understand.
Okay.
So I said, well, that's the man I protect. Okay. So that's I have respect for him. He's an older man.
And he needs my protection.
Yep. And so who he is, what he does, and everything didn't really mean anything to me.
I have the sense that saint worked on you a little bit.
Just a tiny bit. It's beautiful. God works with everybody. If anybody listening to this, in the midst of times where I didn't know how it was up or down and left and right, right there is God.
Yeah.
And this sounds so cliche, but if I look at my life, man, that's exactly what's happened.
Yeah.
You're never alone. Never alone.
Yeah.
And even in the worst, even if I make all these decisions for the wrong reasons, he's still there.
He's still, that's right.
You can't run away from
him. That's right. But, yeah. you make a good point. We're young. We only see as far as our, just about past our hands. Yeah. Nothing else matters except what we want.
Yeah, exactly.
And we really don't want to explore too much because it may take away from who I am.
Exactly.
So we stay
I'm
at
so absorbed, self-absorbed.
Exactly.
I'm so absorbed with myself that I can't see this. And that gives me often pause to reflect today of what do I not see today because of my absorption, self-absorption. Probably never goes away all the way, but you can work on it to think about it. At least you're aware of it.
Of course. Right. Mm-hmm. It's the matter of the will.
Yeah.
It's
a
matter of the will.
Exactly.
I think that faith, it was Thomas Aquinas said that it's an act of intellectual assenting.
Yeah.
And young men have a hard time doing that.
That is so rich, that is the intellectual assent.
And they have a hard time doing that because that intellectual assenting means you really turn to the province of God.
It's the most difficult thing you can do in life.
Of course. Mm-hmm. I know, that's why they call it faith. It's tough, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So here we are. You're got your uniform on. You're looking good. You can see yourself in the mirror, and you're very proud of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
What's starting to happen? What's starting to transpire in Andreas's life?
So the first thing that happened is on that December 24th, that I'm supposed to be off, and they say no, somebody's sick, you go on duty tonight. And I'm like, I'm not even on yet, okay? And they're like, well, do you want to fight with me? It's like the sergeant major coming in and saying, hey, you are going to do this now. And I knew enough not to say no more than twice. And so this guy had the audacity to put me to work before I really started, for a whole night, Christmas night.
Now this is your first.
First assignment.
First assignment. Yeah.
And so
Christmas Eve.
Yeah. Where I come from, Christmas Eve is it.
Yeah.
Right?
Of course.
There was going to be, and I knew this, there was going to be this huge party in the barracks with everybody who's off, and the Pope gives gifts. Right? But, you got to be there.
That's right.
And you would get gifts from the Pope there. And I'm like, this is going to be cool. And then this guy comes up and says, not you, you go work. All night you stay up, you work. I was so angry. I'm telling you, I worked up in anger that day. As a 20-year-old, it almost made my head explode.
Yeah.
And it was in me, and everything boiled that day. And finally what happened is, you know, the commander would allow us to call back home twice a year for free, you know. So that day, there was like a crowd in the courtyard always. There was one telephone for 115 guys, so there was always a crowd around the phone, and you could call home. And I called home that day, and my dad was there, and that's the first time they heard of me from me since I left. And he was very happy that they would keep me in the guards because I passed. And then he said that I should go celebrate Christmas. And I said, well, Dad, I'm not going to celebrate Christmas today because, you know, I'm going to work all night. And he couldn't believe it. And he said, what? You're not going to celebrate Christmas? Then my mother takes the phone away from him.
Of course.
I'm the youngest. She, like, cries uncontrollably on the phone. Doesn't say anything. Just cries.
Boy.
Look, I don't know how to say this, but when my mom cries, I usually have to cry with her.
It's gut-wrenching, right?
Yeah, I just cry with her.
Yeah.
Except there were 20 guys behind me, and I'm playing the tough guy in the military.
Of course.
I had to hang up on her.
Oh.
Because otherwise I would have cried.
You would have lost it. Yeah.
I would have lost it.
Yeah.
So I hang up on her. I go to my room. I get dressed, and I go on duty, which I didn't really realize this at the time, but it was the duty right in front of the papal apartment. So I'm all the way up there.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm the last person before the Pope. But up there's a small little room. And
Now, are you in the Swiss Guard outfit?
Yes.
Here, okay.
Because that's a feast, and usually you'd have another uniform on, which you don't see much. It's blue.
Okay.
Or you're civil. But I was in the gala uniform because of the Christmas Eve thing. And I'm right there in front of his apartment, and you lock yourself into this little room, very little, which is the entrance between, it's about as big as the studio. On one day, there's the door going into the apartment, and the other side is going out into the hallway to the Vatican. And I'm in there, and it's dark, and I'm alone, and I had what I would call my perfect emotional storm of my life. Everything came crashing down.
Mm-hmm.
I accused myself of being a biggest fool. Like, you're in a country, you don't understand the language, you can't even cross the street, what the heck are you doing? And you pretend to be a tough guy, right? These people don't care about you. They all go celebrate Christmas and sign you up, you know, to
and
work all night.
And you're locked in a dark room.
And you're locked in a dark room. This isn't even in the contract. They're forcing you to do this while they have a good time. And besides, you're a failure. What I found, ever since I was 7 years old, I built up armor around me to cover up my insecurities.
Yeah.
And that armor fell away that night. And I was literally, I felt like a seven-year-old boy in that room up there crying for my mom.
Yeah.
And that's when the radio went off and the commander said, Widmer, the Pope is going to use your exit for midnight mass. Let him out. And I'm like... Let the Pope out. So here it comes, you know, my first job. And I go over, you have to unlock the door. The Pope lives like a prisoner, you know.
Yeah.
He can't just go and whatever. I unlock the door. When he comes, he opens the door. And he opens the door, and into my room comes this beautiful light. And he stands in the doorway. And he looks at me. He stands there, and he looks at me and says, hey, you know, what's your name? And I'm... looking at him, and I didn't know what to say. I think I gave him my social security number or something. You know, my dog tag number or something. Yeah. Like that. And he said, he stretched out his hand, and I stretched out my hand, and our hands meet, and I see, and then our eyes meet. And, you know, I immediately knew. My eyes must have been red blotches in my face.
Yeah.
And he immediately noticed. And he didn't ask me any questions. He just said, of course, this must be your first Christmas away from home, isn't it? That was the wrong thing to tell me. I lost it, right? I my tears ran down.
Yeah.
I was so quivered. I couldn't say anything. I quivered with my lips. But he didn't wait. He basically pulled me in, held my hand, and with the other hand he held my elbow. And he had his light gray eyes. And he looked me deep in the eyes, and he said, well, Andreas, I just want you to understand and to know how much I appreciate what you're doing here. This is very difficult, and I appreciate the sacrifice you're making. I tell you what, I'm going to celebrate Mass now, and I'm going to pray for you.
Oh, my goodness.
See, what he did at this time, it didn't, Mass and everything didn't really mean anything to me. What he did is this man embraced that seven-year-old at his most vulnerable moment and said, it's okay.
In love.
And in love. He didn't tell me to do anything. He said he was going to do it. That's what you do with the seven-year-old. Mm-hmm. You don't tell the seven-year-old what to do. You embrace him and you do it.
Yeah.
It's the first step of conversion. Don't go out there and tell people to do this and that. Do it.
Here you thought you were missing a present.
Yeah.
At the party.
Yeah.
And you got the best one
Very
of your
true.
Life.
Never thought of it that way.
God had a greater present for you.
Gives me the goosebumps to think of it.
Yes. What a present he left. What a present was waiting for you.
I tell you. And that was the first time I was impressed with him. From then on, you know, because he reached out to me, he was special to me. Again, in the self-absorbed thing, it took a while to watch him, of how he lived, what he did. He was a tough guy. I mean, I saw him hike and he would go swimming.
Yeah.
And I heard about how he went skiing and he would come to the barracks and be with us and have a beer. And, you know, this is important stuff to impress a 20-year-old,
of course.
And so drinking age is different over there, by the way. So just to not give the wrong impression. One day I saw him and I would see him pray. And one day I just saw the authenticity of this man. And I remember watching him and saying, whatever that man has, that's what I want. This is the peak of my admiration of the guy. And this wasn't my admiration of a pope. This was my admiration for Karol Wojtyła.
Yeah.
Not even a priest. It's just for this man.
For Karol Wojtyła.
And you know what? This is the biggest lesson. So he has all my admiration focused on him. He was like my idol, my hero. And he pointed and he would say, what you want isn't what I have, not who I am. I have a relationship with Jesus Christ and so can you.
Wow.
That's where you need to go.
Yeah.
You see, today we have this culture, this idol culture where people are heroes and role models and everything and they keep it. He wouldn't keep it. He was a way sign.
Of course.
And he pointed towards Christ. So he had my attention and then made himself a wayside to Christ, sign to Christ and said, look, what you need to do is you need to start to pray.
He was the John the Baptist.
Yeah.
Behold
exactly.
The Lamb of God.
Yeah.
It's not me.
Yeah. And he wouldn't take my admiration. He reflected it on and said, that's the guy. And what I have, you can have.
Yeah.
And that just, you know, that was the beginning of my conversion. I mean, I was cradle Catholic and everything, but that's the first time I realized that you can have a personal relationship, a friendship with Christ.
Yes.
Before that, it never occurred to me as the beginning of my nascent faith.
You are listening to Holy Family Radio. This is Deacon Jim Thorndale, and I'm privileged to have in the studio today. We're talking to Andreas Widmar, who was a Pontifical Swiss Guard back in the 86, 87, and 88, and we're hearing a beautiful story of his conversion. So let us continue on that. Andreas, you're talking now that Karol Wojtyła now has, and I've read his books, you know, and his life in underground seminary, everything else. This man was a tough, tough man.
Yeah.
This man knew what it meant to really have true grit and to be for the Lord. You're seeing this in him, and you're wanting. You're not wanting against. At first, you thought you were wanting what he was.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't it.
Yeah, I wanted to be him, you know, which is what we do with heroes. It's like a aspirational lifestyle. Like
exactly.
We want to be like this person or that person.
Yeah.
And what he showed me is that what I want to have what he has, which is he has a relationship with Christ. And the whole peace about him, the whole centeredness. You know, I was looking for an identity. I was looking, trying to see who am I and what, you know. The reason why I had low self-esteem is because I had a very low opinion of myself.
Of course. Yeah.
And so to understand then, to find my true identity, which is not the identity of Karol Wojtyła or anybody else, it's my identity, mm-hmm. That's what he helped me to find.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when once we start to understand who we are, we understand that we are creations of God's,
mm-hmm.
and we're loved by the Father, then we can start to grow in His Son.
Yeah.
So you're on this journey now.
Yeah.
And it starts now with Karol Wojtyła by taking your hand on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
And that's the beginning.
You know, what he started to show is he started to talk about how unique we are, And he would talk to the guards, and I mean, I also hear all, I mean, I'd always be at his side there, not always, but often, and I would hear what he says, and, you know, I learned Italian and all that now, mm-hmm. So I understood several of the languages he spoke and was able to follow. And he talked about how unique we are. And an important thing I learned there, and that is he said, you're so unique that in the entire history of the universe, there was never somebody like you.
That amazing, isn't it?
Never, and never again. And it's not just you with all of these attributes and skills and things you have, even all the negative, you know, the fact that I'm not good at math or I'm tall, but I'm not fast, right? And I may be able to play basketball, but don't ask me to play soccer because I'd be too slow. I'd make a knot into my knees, into my legs. But all of these are these gifts that God gives you.
Exactly.
And he puts you into a specific situation at a specific time.
Yeah.
If you don't use all of these as who you are and use them in the situation you're in, then that opportunity is gone forever.
It is. You're right.
So you can't – I don't want – it is not up to me to be like somebody else. If I'm not like myself, nobody else ever will.
Exactly.
And that's an opportunity that will be gone forever.
That's right.
That's the whole idea of be who you are in this moment, in the place you're in,
yes,
and follow that God's plan, which includes your choices. And I compare it to like God giving you a box of crayons, of saying, look, here's a box of crayons. When I go home, I bring my son a box of crayons, and I want him to paint. Now, do I want him to paint only with some of the colors? No, I want him to use all the colors.
Right.
The important thing is I want him to paint, and he'll say, what do you want me to paint? I don't care what you paint. Just paint. What I really care about is for him to give me the painting afterwards. Who are you painting for? That's important.
Yes.
What you're painting? Secondary. Put yourself into it. And so these crayons, in an analogy, you could say, when you're born, God gives you this with all the crayons, like with all with your size, with your hair, with your eye color and everything, but then also with your abilities,
yes,
and even lack of abilities, with their difficulties. Maybe you're born into a family with certain difficulties, certain ups and downs. Maybe somebody was really bad to you. These are crayons too.
Yes.
And God allows these to be in the box, and you're called to paint with those. Even with illness, black paint, black color.
Yes.
He wants you to paint with those. But the difference is who you're painting for, who that painting is for. The greatest joy I have is if I give crayons to my son and he makes a beautiful painting and gives it to me. That's what God wants with our life.
Right.
He wants us to take his crayons and then to, in our life as canvas, to start painting. And to paint our heart out. Don't say, God, Lord, Lord, tell me what to do, tell me what to do. He wants you to paint, okay?
Exactly.
And he wants you to paint with all the crayons. There is crayons for you and me sitting here, for you listening on the radio. There's crayons you haven't used.
That's right.
There's crayons you're using the wrong way. You use the crayons to paint to your best ability, to his glory.
And to glorify God.
To glorify God. So you may have wealth. You may have charm. You may have skills and abilities that you can choose between using them for yourself or using them for
yes,
God.
Yes.
Using them for others counts as using them for God.
Yes.
Right? We should share it. It's like Mozart has this beautiful gift of making music, of composing music. Mm. If he would have done that and stuck it in the back pocket, he would have had the pleasure with it and of this music, but we would have never. Think of the sublime moments you
That's
can
right.
have when somebody writes music and you hear it. And through that, even going through business with it and having a business idea and bringing it to others, if you don't do that, you're not painting for God.
That's right.
Right? And so we – that's
because he's calling us to live our life to the full.
Yeah.
The life that he's given us.
Exactly.
And
not somebody else's
that's
life.
That's right. You know, another thing that really strikes me, Andreas, is we were all born for this time.
Yeah. Exactly. There's no mistake.
That's right. This is not a mistake. This is not I just happen to be in this time. No, God in his providence brought us here for this time. And we have to find out what it is that he wants from us. And
if Karol Wojtyła – who was half orphan at age 12 and a full orphan at age 18 or 20 or something, would have tried to be like somebody else, he would have never broken the mold he did.
That's right.
And he changed history. And so he's looking at us and says, look, don't live somebody else's life. Live your life and think about your and the beauty of his is what he talked about. To think of the actions you take.
Do you think you were living somebody else's life in your younger years?
Yes, because I lived this image of myself as a tough guy.
Okay.
And so I would see other tough guys and try to imitate them. That was this armor I put on, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
That all. So I spent the first 20 years building a persona that wasn't true.
Mm-hmm.
And so I all lost it that night. It all went away because I know it was a charade.
You're only using a couple crayons.
Yeah. And it was a charade. It wasn't me.
Yeah.
And once that fell away, I started to build myself back up.
Okay, so I'm going to – because I know you've also – you've got a business going also, but I want to get into that on your journey on this too, because I want to make sure we capture all this.
Yeah.
Here you are with Saint Pope John Paul II. We don't know he's the saint yet at this point, but you're with the Pope.
Yeah.
And you're seeing him. How often do you see him now?
Well, every couple of days.
Okay.
And it's not that you talk to him all the time, because you're supposed to be in the background and being quiet and not seen and, you know. And so we talk once in a while.
Okay.
But most of the time I see him, see what he does and everything. I observe because that's my job.
Sure.
But it's not like I talk to him every day.
Would you accompany him in your suit?
Both.
In both suits?
Yeah. So if suit, sometimes uniform.
Okay.
I would also be there when he gives a speech or something. I'd stand next to him in either in a suit or sometimes in a uniform as an honor guard. And then you stand there all the time and just listen.
What if he's traveling on an airplane? Who goes with him then?
Higher level Swiss guards.
Okay.
So that would be the officers. They're trained much better than we are.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So here you're gleaning a lot.
Yeah, I'm the fly on the wall.
Yeah, you're gobbling it up.
Yeah.
And are you starting to really be more catechized then as he's speaking?
Of course, then there were people around him who observed this. We had a chaplain in the guards. And I really started to convert, have deep, deep prayer experiences. He asked me to pray the rosary, which to me was laughable.
Yeah.
But then I did it. And I had deep experiences of God and the Eucharist and you know, once you experience God, you can't sit in this safe cocoon anymore of saying, well, I don't know. Like, you know, the cocoon is for the people who say, well, there may be a God, there might not, I don't really know. So, and that's sort
so
of,
I'll
you can have
on
it both
this
ways.
Proverbial fence until.
Yeah. No more fence for me after these experiences.
Yeah.
And so then I threw myself into it. And then people started to catechize me both and give me books to read. And I started to get very close with several priests around John Paul II.
Wonderful.
Who really started to catechize me.
Yeah, started to bring in. You know, we've said a lot of times on the show here, you know, we as Catholics, we sacramentalize ourselves, but we don't give a conversion.
Yeah.
We don't bring them into a relationship with the Lord Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really what you're saying. Is you had the sacraments.
Yeah.
You received what? Confirmation, Eucharist, and entering a baptism.
Yeah.
But didn't have that understanding of a personal relationship with Christ.
That's the other thing, is that they brought me back to confession. You know, that was an experience.
That scary sacrament.
Yeah. Oh, that is a beautiful sacrament.
Of course
I tell
it is.
You, and they brought, and it came back in the guards and with the chaplain and life changing. I was so, you know, God is so good. Well, see, God doesn't want us to think of, you know, recently with Christmas, God comes as this little baby. Even today, God comes in the sacrament of the Eucharist. You could take, it's a wafer. You could take it, throw it on the floor and step on it if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
Yet that's the creator of the universe.
Yeah.
Why? It's like saying, with your wife or your husband or your friends, you have to love me. And then you say, okay, I love you because you want me to. That's not love. Mm. That's what he wants, though. He wants real love.
That's right.
So if God would show himself in his glory, we would be obliged to love him.
That's right.
But he doesn't want that. He wants us to choose to love him. And that he can only do if he shows himself as weak as possible. Because if he would show one inkling of his strength, it wouldn't be love anymore.
Be overpowered.
So he comes as a baby. In the backwaters of the Roman Empire somewhere, and he comes every day in a wafer that you could throw away.
Yeah.
And there's no defense, none whatsoever, unless, other than the love of the people who respect it.
And unless you see with eyes of faith, and then you begin to realize that his words meant what he said.
And then it becomes the most powerful thing.
Yeah. You know, can you recall your first real good sacrament of reconciliation? Can you recall when you finally went back to that sacrament? You're laughing here now, because I think we've all had that experience. It's a scary experience at first.
I felt I could fly afterwards.
Yeah.
I felt I could fly.
Yeah.
And our chaplain was a very wise a wise pastor of these young men, because he would always bring in other priests because he lived with us, okay? And it's going to be difficult for us to go to him to confession.
Of course.
And he said, that's beside the point. Let's not make this an issue. But then he acted on it, and then he brought other people in,
yeah,
and said, this is not what you should think about. So this priest you may never meet again, mm-hmm, because this isn't about the priest. This is about the confession.
The priest is in persona.
Exactly.
Of Christ.
Yeah, exactly.
But you know what? I understand. It's hard to go to somebody you have a friendship with.
Yes.
And then once you've exposed yourself to all that stuff, it's not that he's going to remember that, but you know, it's just, it's a,
exactly. Today I understand this.
Yeah.
He was a wise man. Because he realized this
and he knew you'd have a more profound confession.
He orchestrated everything, and he knew how to reach these young men.
So you came out higher in a kite.
Oh, I could fly afterwards. And this is, you know, the beauty is that there were many of us who had these kind of conversions.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought of the priesthood after this and all that, and really started to discern what I should do with my life.
Yeah. You know, it's amazing. One of the that sacrament is probably the hardest one for our non-Catholic brothers and sisters to understand, is the sacrament of reconciliation, because they don't understand the exhilaration of coming out of there, knowing you're sitting with Christ, mm-hmm, and knowing there's an assurance you're forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just, well, I hope God hears me.
Yeah.
You've got the absolution from Christ in persona through the priest, and he gives that absolution, and you know that you leave there feeling, oh my gosh, if I went in there with purity of heart, then I know I come out of it.
See, it's that powerful thing of what John Paul talks about in the theology of the body, is that we're sacramental people.
Yes.
We act.
Yeah.
My act is a physical act that has spiritual meaning.
Yes.
Everything I do, everything I say lives on. My actions are an external manifestation of my soul.
Exactly.
Therefore, they can have an effect on my soul. We all know that our actions can have an effect on the soul in a negative sense. Well, they can do in the positive sense as well.
That is so true.
And so if we go, this is why we have holy water and crucifixes and all these physical, the smoke that of incense that goes up to heaven, like, to the altar, like the prayers, prayers. This, we are a material incarnation of spirits, right?
Yes,
and
exactly.
We both spirit and physical together.
Yes.
It's not like I'm caught in my body and I can't wait to get out. No. This is it. This is it.
Exactly.
And therefore, what we do physically matters.
And that's why some of our churches are so beautiful inside.
Exactly.
Because it reflects the beauty of God.
Yeah.
And it's the best man can do to really bring out divinity.
Yeah.
And we have these beautiful statues of the saints. Not that we worship them, but it puts us in a position to understand that the ones who went before us had this heart for the Lord.
Yeah.
And so
that they're still here.
Yeah, and we pray with them.
Yeah.
It's a powerful understanding.
It's beautiful. And I think that this convergence of the spiritual and the physical is really what we need to understand how to live here on earth.
Yeah.
And to understand, I mean, that's why would God become man?
Yeah.
You know, that's and the only answer we find in that is by living in our physical form and seeing that everything physical therefore acquires sacramentality, sacredness.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now for us to do these actions, think of every action you take in a sacramental way. Even if you're driving right now, how can you make that?
Sure.
Everything you do physically,
you can
do to the glory of God. That's
you know,
beautiful.
It reminds me we're looking at a winter day today, how many times you can be exasperated in the car because somebody's not driving like you want them to. The sacramental act can be one of just charity, of not responding to it, and just, you know, but it's hard for many people to do.
Maybe they go through a totally bad. The reason why they're distracted is something happened to them. And people, even people you don't like, who are mean to you, that sacramental charity of both forgiveness and also, you know, John Paul used to say that his favorite prayer is not so much to ask God for things, but to say, Lord, let me see the world you see it, the way you see it.
Yeah.
Let me see this person with your eyes.
Yeah, isn't that wonderful?
And if you pray that, you start to really, the world opens up. The world opens up. Try it.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's a wonderful thought. So here you are, Swiss Guard for two and a half, three years?
2 years.
You're learning a lot. Mm-hmm. You're being catechized. You're beginning to have a tremendous relationship with the Lord Jesus.
Yeah.
But it also starting to transform you into business.
Yeah. I started to find out that the military isn't really my thing. So, you know, I'm 2 years there, and I'm struggling in the sense of the rhythm of it and, you know, no talking back and all that. I wasn't born to be in the military, let's say, huh? And I knew it, and they knew it. And most of the guards, they serve 2 years, and that's what I did.
And that's pretty much 2 years?
And that's what they do. You still afterwards belong to the Brotherhood, and I go back every year now and just serve a little bit and help out whatever I can do.
Okay.
Not the real guarding of the Pope, but the,
right.
But in any way I can do. And it's joyful to go and help but then I met my wife there as well, and so I discerned that I was called to marriage, and she is American from Chicago.
Okay.
And so I...
Oh, three of the big shoulders.
Yeah. So I didn't speak English at the time, so it was sort of urgently... But the only way you do this... So I came to America.
Now, wait a minute. You didn't speak English.
Yeah.
She's from Chicago.
Yeah.
Does she speak...
She spoke French and Italian.
Oh, okay.
Although my friend said, she loves you because she can't understand the word you're saying. If she would, she wouldn't. She spoke English and French and Italian, and
okay.
We spoke that way. And I learned English, and I came here to Boston and went back to school because that's the way, I mean, how else am I going to come here?
Okay. Was it hard to leave? I mean, was there a sentimental tug on you leaving the guard?
Yes.
Yeah.
Difficult to leave. I saw John Paul on the last few days.
Okay.
And I had a little audience with him. And when he comes into the room knowing that he's going to have a last audience, he always knows, and even now there's something called the last audience. And that's, you know, in certain intervals, the guards who leave. And so the Pope comes in, and he knows this is going to be, and he sees me, and he says, what are you doing here? There must be a mistake. And I said, no, Holy Father, I'm actually done. You know, I'm going to go. And he says, what? You just started. How can you leave already? Is it something I said? Sort of, he's joking, and he makes it fun. And he said, well, why are you leaving? And I said, well, you know, I'm not getting any younger. Of course, that made him laugh out loud. I'm 22 years old. I'm telling him, I'm not getting any younger. And he says... you know, he made some jokes about it and then said, no, look, with all seriousness, you go, you found Christ here, you go bring that Christ. Bring Christ out into the world, into
Amen.
Whatever you do. Yeah, go with my blessing, go bring Christ. And then I went and I tried, and I failed more than I was succeeding, but it's, you know, I'm a work in progress.
It probably has a lot to do, you know, when you're in the Vatican circle,
mm-hmm.
it's very easy to keep that Catholicism alive because you're surrounded by it. But then you go out into the world, and pretty soon you feel like a little bit of a loner out there.
What happened is I came to the U.S. and I started to go to school. And then through school in Boston, I found a company that hired me as a non-paid intern first who... you know, as incredible as this sounds, they developed the internet for the PC. The internet
okay.
was a Unix protocol, and they translated that for the PC.
Okay.
So it's called FTP software. And I was one of the early employees there, and I was doing all their international stuff in the beginning unpaid, and then eventually I got a green card, and I started to work there. And this is all while I'm still in school, and I'm heading up their international department.
Now, what are you studying in school?
International business.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I... I'm a part and in the senior management of this hugely successful company suddenly. And then I move and I have another company called Dragon Systems that was invented speech recognition. I mean, everything I touched turned to gold. And the danger is this, that I started to have too much money and I was blinded by it. And I started to think it was all me.
Yeah.
And I still would go to church on Sunday and Jesus was still the man on Sunday. As long as I was the man from Monday through Saturday.
Or from about Sunday at about noon.
Yeah.
Until about, yeah.
And I tell you, I laugh about it now, but that's what I did. I started to live a compartmentalized life.
Yeah, yeah.
And I, of course, thought everything was hunky-dory and fine, but it wasn't. And it took God to reach out to me in very powerful ways, just in ways that were unmistakable. To bring me back
yeah.
and to see my errors. Yeah. And
what if they say God can't use a proud heart?
No.
He has to get you on your knees before you're of value to him.
Oh, boy, did he get me on my knees.
Yeah.
In success and in failure, you know, what eventually happened is we sold Dragon, the company, we sold that for $600 million.
That's that Dragon you see now?
Yeah. Speech recognition.
The speech recognition, yeah.
We sold that for $600 million in 2000. And I owned a chunk of that.
Wow.
And I was very arrogant at that point because I just had a string of successes.
Because I just made it.
Yeah.
I'm the man.
I'm the man.
I'm second in control.
Yeah. And, you know, they say that that's the issue with money, that it's not the root of all evil, but the love of money is.
Exactly.
And I started to consider myself sort of different, right? And I could, you know, I did all first class and this and that. And it's very difficult to withstand that temptation.
Did you start to lose that understanding what John Paul said to you about seeing the other person?
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
I drifted away.
Yeah.
The only thing that always happened is I would have these tremendous experiences when I received the Eucharist, which made me cry, just like that first night.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a crier. And I had to hide it, walking back to the aisle, to my seat, and yeah. Like, say, oh, I have a cold or something like that.
Something in my eye.
Yeah, something in my eye. Well, one day we sold this company, and I had the opportunity to sell some of the stock then. And I didn't want to, and my wife was pleading with me to say, who have you become? We started with nothing back in Rome and everything, and here we are. We have more money than we need, and what's this all about? And I was very arrogant, and I said, well, I'll sell a little bit to please, you know, for you, but you watch me. You know, I'm going to go
so
keep
that,
this.
So that big P word was coming into play, yeah. That pride.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I didn't sell all that. I just sold a bit for her.
Uh-huh.
Well, so I kept my share, and it turned out that 2 months later, the people we sold this company to were fraudulent.
Oh, my gosh.
And $600 million turned into zero in two days.
Oh, my.
Well, that was a wake-up call. And I praise God for that today because that was the 2x4 I needed to wake up to say...
That was the second gift.
Yeah, that was the second gift.
That was the second gift.
Yeah.
The first one was John Paul coming to you.
Yeah. And, of course, at the time, you don't see it.
Yeah.
But boy, did that hurt. And that had to, you know, today I have the perspective, but at the time, and this, if you listen to this, maybe you go through something like this right now. And at the time I didn't see it, but there's nothing, no matter how horrible it happens to you. I'm not saying that God is sending this to hurt me or something.
No.
I'm saying God is allowing some things to happen to give you, again, this opportunity to turn.
And these people that came to you, if they were fraudulent, could have been that your pride was great enough not really to do the research you needed to do?
I knew. Even my friends in the company, we knew. We had a gut feeling. We knew that they were no good, but we took the money over it. I know the feeling. I knew it. We had it in our stomach.
Yeah.
But we were so blinded
with
that money. And we just – these were former competitors. I knew that they were no good. And I did it anyway. You know, that's – today I praise God for the experience.
Yeah.
But I'm not kidding you. This hurt a lot.
It had to be, at the time, I can only imagine the devastation.
You get depressed.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was the sacrament of reconciliation who turned me around after that. And my wife and I, we went. She went in first. I went in second. Can you imagine this priest in
there? You wanted her to soften him up, huh?
Can you imagine a priest sitting there saying, this sounds awfully familiar?
Yeah.
And with this grace, you know, he asked me afterwards to not get out of the car at home before I ask forgiveness of my wife for what I have done.
Yeah.
And I did. And we cried. We sat in that car for 2 hours plus. And that grace just really mended our relationship.
No, wonderful.
And changed our life.
That's really God working through you. And you responded to the grace.
Yeah.
Responded to
I wanted
grace.
To... I want to say, because there's so much more I'd like to tell all you who are listening to this, I wrote a book where I put this all in, and it's called The Pope and the CEO.
Please, tell us.
And so you can find me on Facebook like this, The Pope and the CEO, or you can go on Amazon or anywhere here in a bookstore and find the book. I put that whole experience in there, and there's much more there about to turn. And then for me to go back into business afterwards and say, now, how do we create – a Christian business.
Yeah.
How do you do this?
Yeah.
How do you put the center, the person as the center of entrepreneurship?
Exactly.
And of business. How do you be a leader and a worker even, and actually paint for God with the success at your company. I had other companies afterwards, and then, praise God, some of them were successful and some of them weren't.
Yep.
But that's part of, you know, part of what you do.
That's right.
And I think I'm on to something with starting to see some light. You know, I'm hard to learn. And I'm happy to share with everybody because it's sort of
– yes.
I'm writing this down for myself. Now, I'm just sharing it with you so you can see it. You can see my notes. So, you know, it's like my tally of reminding myself of this and that. And in this book, I put in 10 lessons I learned. And it's easy to read. And at the end, I put in little exercises that are actionable at the end.
Okay.
To just help you to say, what can I do tomorrow
of course,
to change? You
of
know?
Course.
And it's – I feel so privileged to having had this relationship with John Paul that what I really want to do is to turn around and share that with you.
Yeah.
And say, beautiful. How can you participate in this, what I have received? Because this is not me, okay? I'm as thick as they come, okay? Okay? That's why I'm the exhibit A. And just for me to then turn around and let me look over my shoulder and see the notebook,
yeah.
Right? And that's the book, The Pope and the CEO, and I just offer that to everybody. I pray for everybody who reads it to gain further insight,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Into their own life so that you – how to become the best version of you, because that's what you're called to be. I'm not called to be somebody else. I'm called to be Saint Andreas Widmer.
Amen.
And we're called to that. And John Paul turns and says, if I can do it, you can do it. And if you don't believe him, read St. Augustine.
That's right.
That's why he's my favorite saint. If he can do it, anybody becomes,
you know,
a saint.
I really cathect St. Augustine myself, too, because
yeah.
I understand where he came from. And it's really it's a privilege to hear this story, Andreas, because, you know, when you hear this, I have this profound sense within you of a man who was broken, fell to his knees, and really said, okay, Lord, I'm yours.
Yeah.
You know, now you take me and mold me like you want me, because, you know.
And I'm a work in progress. Sometimes I ask myself, you know, I am at this radio and you hear me for wherever you are. And it's sort of, I put myself out there. Look, I'm by no means perfect. You can call my wife. She'll tell you all about it.
Well, she called her.
Yeah, she called. She's going to call in on the listener line. So, but look, this isn't about me. This is about you.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's not about me. We are all work in progress. What it is if you get a gift, and when you get a crayon, you paint. Well, I'm using this crayon, and I paint. It's a rare one, and I paint, and I try to share it.
Now, praise be to God.
So I have all these other faults, but this crayon, I need to share it, and I'm trying to paint,
yeah.
And that's why I'm here to talk to everybody, to just – I'm not going to keep this to myself. It's a huge privilege, and I want to share it.
Give us the name of that book again.
The Pope and the CEO.
The Pope and the CEO.
Yeah.
And you can get that at Amazon.
Amazon. It's published by Emmaus Road Press.
Okay.
And it's available in bookstores and on Amazon.
I would encourage our audiences listening, if you're having some struggles in life right now, whether it be in business or a marriage or whatever it is, really, it's really an understanding of being, as Andreas is saying, being the best person you can be and being who you are and being real and genuine. And once you do that, you really open up God's gifts.
Yeah.
You begin to see what he has in store for you, and you begin to paint with that full array of colors.
And happiness to be centered and centered, and therefore you find peace and happiness.
Yeah.
Is what we want.
Have you found that happiness, Andreas?
I'm working on it.
Working on it.
But I can say it's worlds of a difference.
Yeah.
Since I work for the real man and not
the real CEO.
For me. Yeah, the real CEO.
And it sounds like you have a beautiful spouse that's on a journey with you.
Absolutely. Couldn't do it without her.
Isn't that wonderful?
She was ahead of me, remember.
I think about those beautiful sacramental covenant relationship we have with our spouse. And it's the same one that Christ the bridegroom wants with us.
Yeah.
He's the bridegroom for us, and then we really respond to him as a spouse, and we live
very
with him.
Very true.
Yeah, we live with him in this beautiful understanding of sacramental relationship.
Absolutely.
I want to thank you for being here today. It's been a great conversation. I just I love to hear the story. You're the first pontifical Swiss guard I've known, and I, you know, by the grace of God, I'll meet a few others. But
Deacon, and thank you for your ministry and for what you do here on the radio. This is really important. I know the radio reaches a lot of people when they're in their car alone. And thank you for your ministry.
You're so welcome. And as always, we're going to wish you Godspeed and that he will continue to bless you. Thank you for listening. This is Deacon Jim Thornhill saying, may God bless you on your journey.
You've been listening to Living the Catholic Life with your host, Deacon Jim Thornhill, on Holy Family Radio. If you'd like to listen to this program again or share it with a friend, Audio copies are available online at holyfamilyradio.net. Thank you for listening.